That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Brady and Walker, now. TV, Sportsnet 360. Radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome to the show. It is Brady and Walker on your Friday, our 1 o'clock hour, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. Just Walker today, no Brady, as summer holidays. He always begins summer holidays by watching a summer catch with Freddie Prinze. That's his that's his routine. All right, so I'm fascinated by NHL trades and NHL free agent signings. Let's be honest, sometimes they're better than the games. We're all fascinated by them. Sometimes I don't quite get them, even still. Yeah, cap space is a fickle beast that always crops up into these trades. But cap space doesn't score any goals, it doesn't make any saves, yet it's the most sought-after free agent on the market. Take yesterday's Caps-Blues trade. Leaves me scratching my head a little bit. Am I missing something on TJ Oshie here? He has a hefty $4 million-plus price tag the next 2 years, but surely Troy Brouwer in a third-round pick is return that had a few rival GMs jumping up and down in protest. We could have beaten that, would have been the refrain. I love TJ Oshie. Play for my team any day. And he's American. Takes a lot for me to say that. This was the biggest problem the Calgary Flames had back in the day when trading Dion Phaneuf. They could have gotten more had they just looked for it. Same could maybe be said for the Bruins and Dougie Hamilton in theory. For me, it was the icing on the cake when it came to who the big winner was over the last week. I love what the Caps did. TJ Oshie in, Mr. Game 7, Justin Williams in, the presence of mind to walk away from Mike Green. Tough to not like what the Calgary Flames did with the Michael Frolik signing. The bigger story there has probably yet to be written. They'll have some decisions to make. Now listen, I'll admit it's tough to really hammer your first winners and losers down. Maybe the Leafs were the big winner July 1st. Who knows? A little time has to be added to that equation. But hands up if you still can't put a finger on what the Bruins are doing or what the Vancouver Canucks are doing moving forward. On a day when normalcy reigned, though, maybe it's tougher to peg the losers. As far as winners go, though, Washington Capitals have to be at the top of the list, don't they?
This is Brady and Walker. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. On TV at Sportsnet 360. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker. Or text 590-590. Now here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
Welcome to the show. It is our 1 o'clock hour. Brady and Walker, just Walker today. Greg Brady returns in a couple of weeks or something. Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360 leading off our good buddy, Matthew Barnaby, who joins us on the phone line to discuss some of what we saw over the last few days in the National Hockey League. So I got a little bit of news, Matt, coming in. Our viewers are on Sportsnet 360. Will only be with us for about another 10 minutes or so. Now, there's certain moments as a broadcaster. There's certain moments as a broadcaster that kind of make you feel inferior. We are cutting away from the show to go live to Connor McDavid doing practice drills at Rexall Place in Edmonton. So that's what people will be watching. They'll come back to the show, but we're being preempted for that. So there you go.
Mick Xavier, we have to see, of course. And, hey, it could be worse. They could be tuning in to see me doing some gardening today. So I think going to see McDavid might be a bright spot for your listeners today.
Just viewers, Sportsnet 360, we'll be back, and we'll stay the whole time at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So your thoughts on the biggest move of the day yesterday was that TJ Oshie trade. And you heard that name was going to be in rumors. It was out there for a while. And I wonder if I'm missing something on TJ Oshie. Out of all the guys for St. Louis to move off of, why him?
It's a good question. I think, you know, I thought if you're going to trade TJ Oshie, I thought there might be a better return. And I like Troy Brouwer. He brings a physical presence. But why TJ Oshie? I just thought something had to be done with this team. This is a team that has underachieved for at least the past 2 years. But since they put this core together, they've underachieved, Walks, and someone had to pay the price. I don't think David Backus he's your captain. I think that's a guy that really is what Ken Hitchcock wants in a player and a leader going forward. He loves the hard work. He loves the size. He loves the physical play. And someone had to be moved. It wasn't going to be a Tarasenko. It wasn't going to be one of your smaller, fast guys because this team desperately needs speed. And I think TJ Oshie, with the price tag he's at, just made him expendable. They wanted to change a little bit of the dynamic. And I wouldn't be surprised if another guy is moved out to try to change and get them over the top. Not blaming TJ Oshie. I think he's a very good hockey player. I think Washington gets a good player in return, a guy that can score goals. But I just think they needed to change the dynamic in some way or form. It doesn't look like it's going to be a net. So TJ Oshie, they thought, was expendable.
It was just so weird to me because they extend Laterra, pretty good player. But that's a 4.7 cap hit going forward. They could trade Patrick Berglund. He's got a couple more years at 3.7. They were more than happy to extend Alexander Steen for well over 5. They're going to have to pay Jaden Schwartz. They're going to have to pay Vladimir Tarasenko. But of all those guys, and they're all making around the same boat, I just question why TJ Oshie was the guy to go. And to your point, there's other GMs out there today that have to be kicking themselves that you know they weren't in on that. The same with Dougie Hamilton, right?
You have to think that Montreal, if they don't get a Joel Ward, has to be going, we can give up more than that to get a TJ Oshie in a top six forward, a team that desperately needs in their lineup. And to your point with Patrick Berglund, I would be very surprised if he starts the season in St. Louis. I think that he will be moved. I don't think they like the heart that he plays with. I think the emotion, he's just a big, talented guy that isn't living up to that body and that talent, and that's just lack of heart. So I would be surprised if he starts the season in St. Louis, unless they can't really get any return for him. But I would think that there's teams around the league would still fall in love with that size and that talent. But I'm with you. Montreal is still puzzling to me. They need a top six forward, and if they can't land Joel Ward, they got to be kicking themselves on this TJ Oshie thing.
Matt Barnaby, our guest on Brady and Walker. So let's talk about the Leafs and Phil Kessel. Your first reaction when you heard about the Kessel deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I think it's good for Pittsburgh. I think it's great for Phil Kessel, and I think it's great for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You had to move on. You had to move on. His lack of commitment to working out and being a leader, you're not going to win with Phil Kessel if he's your leader. There's just no ifs, ands, or but that you're going to have a successful team if he's your guy. He's the Marion Gaborik of the East. And do I think you can win with him? Yes. If you're surrounded by a Sidney Crosby and a Evgeny Malkin and a Chris Letang and a Marc-Andre Fleury and that, if he's a secondary piece, just like Gaborik is for the Los Angeles Kings, you can be successful. Again, the return, we knew the return for Phil Kessel would all depend on how much money you were willing to gobble up and keep under your books. If you're willing to keep $3 million, you're going to get a lot more in return for Phil Kessel. If you're willing to keep just over $1 million, then the return is going to be less. And I'm surprised that they did the deal without getting a Pouliot or a defenseman, not that they didn't acquire some assets and the first-round pick. But I think when you look at exactly what they got in return, it all made sense because Toronto didn't have to gobble all that much of his contract. Pittsburgh gets an elite score. He's going to score at least 35 goals, playing with probably Evgeny Malkin. Maybe he'll get a little time with Sidney Crosby. The power play automatically becomes better in Pittsburgh, which has been inconsistent over the years. So I think it's a win-win-win for everyone involved. Toronto gets rid of who they deemed maybe a cancer, and I don't like using that word, but there's no other way to put it, a bad attitude, a lack of commitment. And they just want to get guys on short-term contracts going forward and try to change the culture of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they don't get a great return. They get rid of a lot of money off the books, and they get rid of and they start to culminate this culture going forward, which is hard work.
Who knows? Maybe the ins and outs of this deal will come out eventually. But do you get the feeling, let's say Pittsburgh or let's say Toronto, who eats 15% here, let's say they say we'll eat 30%, but we're talking Olli Maatta as opposed to Scott Harrington. When you're not going to be a cap team, And I know 7 years is a long time, obviously. But when you're not going to be a cap team, is spending that money for better prospects, for more draft picks and deals, do you think that's something that's worth doing?
I think the more darts you have to throw at the dartboard, and that's prospects and that's draft picks, the better chance you are at maybe getting a guy that's going to help you in the future. I think they're doing what we thought they would do, and that's acquire young talent, and hopefully some of them pay off. And when you look at a Kapanen, do they have a lot of guys like him in the system? Yes, they have Nylander, they have Kadri, they have Mitch Marner. You see when they draft in the second round, Jeremy Bracco. So they have a lot of the same players. I think they're just trying to get as many in the system and hopefully hit on a few. You know, again, we won't be able to tell a lot of this going forward until a lot of these prospects, we see how they pan out. Some of them might never turn into something good in the National Hockey League. Then we're able to judge a lot of these trades on two or three years down the road. But it's premature to think we can say it's a good deal or a bad deal. Again, they did what they wanted. They want to get a guy like Phil Kessel out. Olimata would never have been on the table. The deal would have stopped with an Olimata right away. It looked like it even stopped with with a Pouliot. So you get secondary talent and secondary prospects, and we'll see how they play out later on in the future.
Matthew Barnaby, our guest. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan here in Toronto. So what about Pittsburgh? This was a team that, I mean, who doesn't like Crosby? Who doesn't like Malkin? They swap out Neal for Hornquist a year ago. They've always been top-heavy. It's always been the criticism. And rather than go a completely different direction, because you know how it was at the start of this offseason, people were talking about, boy, what could you get in an Evgeny Malkin haul and kind of sprinkle the depth out throughout. And we all know in the playoffs they were banged up in the blue line too. But instead they basically go even deeper in on the formula. Now they have the three best forwards in hockey, top to bottom. And still, the depth or lack thereof is going to be the secondary storyline with this team. How do they look to you? Is this a contender?
I don't know if it's a contender yet, but I think they're a better hockey team than they were last year. They needed scoring on the wings. They didn't have a Pascal Dupuis, who, you know, now you've got your top six forwards. They're pretty darn good. You have Sutter as your third line setter, who I think is a terrific hockey player, whether they decide to move on and add other pieces. I think they're a contender in the East. I think Marc-Andre Fleury answered a lot of questions last year. You know, we talked about being top-heavy. Yes, they are, but if you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, they're pretty top-heavy, too, when you look at Marian Hossa and Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. That gobbles up
but I wouldn't call Chicago top-heavy, right? Pittsburgh doesn't have the Sods and the Hossas on that club?
No, absolutely not. And that's because, their lack of depth, they're trying to add to that. And I think that's where you have to try to fill in. That comes in drafting. And it comes back to the point. I mean, do they have the – no, they haven't drafted as well as other teams. When you get a Brandon Saad in a draft and you cultivate this guy and you get guys on ELC, to win you need guys on ELC. And you see what Chicago is doing again this year. But I think we'd be naive to think that if Phil Kessel isn't going to come in and help this team, especially with the 3-on-3 formulas, if you get 15 games that go into overtime, I'll take Phil Kessel on my team any day of the week as a secondary scorer. I think this team can compete. I think we'll see the growth on the back end. I think they have to stay healthy, but they desperately needed a little bit more scoring on the wings. Again, Sidney Crosby is arguably the best forward in the game, best player in the world right now. He's been doing it with mixed match of wingers that have been hurt and the Pascal Dupuis, who I think is a very good hockey player. But, I mean, he hasn't played with elite players on his wing for most of his career. So I think when you add guys like a Phil Kessel, whether he plays with Malkin or Crosby, I just think that this team is a lot better now than it was, 3 months ago.
Matthew Barnaby, our guest, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I want to ask you about Buffalo and what they've done, what the mood is down there. It's where you're based out of. I just got a couple quick ones more on Phil Kessel. You saw how this ended here July 1st. And God, I mean, the story that's getting all the play in the paper right now is the one that you know, for the most of it, just focuses on the hot dogs that Phil Kessel eats. Fair or on
hot dogs. I love hot dogs.
We all love hot dogs.
Joey Chestnut's going to eat about 65 today in the hot dog eating contest. So I don't know if Phil's going to be in it, but he'd probably do a pretty good job.
I'm taking a different route when I go to Blue Jays games to avoid like the hot dog carts, because you know you're going to stop. It's just, you know you're going to stop unless you don't have cash, and then you'll just beg. Whether it was fair or unfair, the way that you know Phil Kessel got portrayed on his way out, is there a comparable? Like, that's the one thing we all know, right? And everyone will admit it. Even the guys that like Phil Kessel be like, well, he's not a leader. Maybe he resents that. I don't know. Did you play with the guy that, you know, great player, he had to be your go-to guy, but you knew it was never going to work because he wasn't that consummate leader?
Wow. That's off the top of my head, that's a tough one. I guess Alexei Kovalev, you know, we always kept wanting more from him. Super talented, really got undressed after a game in mega seconds and was out of the room. I loved him as a teammate. I don't know if he is your go-to guy, a guy that you rely on every single day to compete. You know, there's a month that he'd go and he'd be the most dominant player in the league, and then for 2 months would disappear. Great guy, a good teammate, but I just don't think as a primary guy that he is your guy. When they won the Stanley Cup with Alexei Kovalev in 94 with the Rangers, I mean, he was a secondary guy. He was a rookie that was out of the limelight, that didn't have to be the go-to guy, and had a great playoff to help him in his rookie season win the Stanley Cup. But I think the more he evolved, he just wasn't that primary guy that you wanted. Phil Kessel is that guy. I don't think he's a bad guy. I've met him several times. He's always been nice. He's never wanted to deal with the media. He's always been in the outskirts. He doesn't want to train hard. He doesn't want to work hard. He's just ultra talented. And the talent, the way he skates is just one of those things that you can't teach. He has something that a lot of people don't have. He's one of the three or four guys that can score off the wing from a position on talent alone. But to want more and to be a Stanley Cup champion and to be successful and lead your team, you know, you have to work hard in the summer. You have to come into camp in great shape. To say and to openly come out and admit, maybe being too honest, and say, I skate 10 times in the summer, and to look at his body fat and it looks like a tire around his waist, I mean, that's not acceptable for a professional athlete, especially for a guy that's going to make $10 million this year and $8 million on the cap. So I think it's disappointing. He's a very good hockey player. Hopefully this might turn things around. I'm always under the analogy that you can't teach heart. You can't teach hard work. And if you aren't willing, if you don't have it deep down in you that you want to be better than the next guy and lead your team to almost will it to success, like a Jonathan Toews. You know, when we look at him, we talk about how much of a leader he is. It's just not because it just doesn't happen. He puts the work in the summer. He puts the work in mentally. He does everything. He eats well. He has all his food ready for him and cooked for him, so he doesn't have to eat like a slob. So that's a leader. Phil Kessel will never be a leader. Hopefully this just changes him a little bit, and hopefully the pressure from everyone thinking these things about him can maybe turn his career around. He's always going to score goals. Again, he's going to score 35, whether he eats 1,000 hot dogs a day or he goes on to salad. Whether he can be that go-to guy is an attitude, and I don't know if he has that.
Well, that's my point, though, too, right? Like, I get it. You know, he looked too round. He did odd things. He admitted he worked out 10 times in the off season. He had a bad year, and great players have bad years. It's never really affected him, right? Like, do we really care? Like, Dustin Byfuglien has been the preeminent guy in this regard, too. Right, it was advertised. Boy, he likes to go to the McDonald's drive-thru, and he's overweight. And we saw some pictures. He's never going to be that chiseled, you know, guy that looks like Giancarlo Stanton and evokes fear in you. I'm having a difficult time really putting it all together of how that really mattered for Phil on the ice.
Well, I just think it's a culture you build. And like I said, whether he trains or he isn't, he's going to score 30 goals. I just think it's a culture that you build and a mentality that you, if you want to be successful, doesn't matter. I mean, he can be better. I mean, as good and talented as he is, and we see the money that he makes and the goals that he's scored and how productive he's been, it's a mentality. And I think when you have a mentality of not really caring, that filters to the rest of the guys. And I just think if he wants to, I don't know him that well. I don't know what he wants. You know, does he remind me a little bit of a Thomas Vanek? Yeah, he skates much better, but they kind of have the same attitude in the fact that it just doesn't look like they really, really want to commit to winning a Stanley Cup.
Sure.
And that's the hard thing. Now, Phil Kessel has scored a lot of goals with Tyler Bozek as his number one center. That's one thing. He's going to score automatically more with a true number one center. I mean, Toronto Maple Leafs can't get rid of Tyler Bozek as a number one center on a $4.2 million cap hit for a second round pick. That goes to show what everyone else in the league thinks of Tyler Bozek. But to commit to winning a Stanley Cup, I put him in the same light as a Thomas Vanek. Very talented players will always get their goals. Unfortunately, to win a Stanley Cup, you need some drive. You need some wherewithal to dig down. I don't know if he has that.
Talking hockey with Matt Barnaby here on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Brady and Walker. So tell me about Buffalo right now. We have this debate internally here because Brady gets very, very excited at the prospects of the Sabres making the playoffs next year, and I think he maybe looks past a couple of seemingly empty positions. Hey, we all like Ryan O'Reilly. Not all of us like Evander Kane, but Jack Eichel looks like the real deal to be sure. How do they set up? How what's the timeline here now? What are they missing?
I on the back end. I mean, yes, you went and got Ryan O'Reilly, who's a very good hockey player, going to be their number one center. You have one of the top prospects to come along in the last 10 years in Jack Eichel that's going to be a great number two center for the next couple years and eventually will take over as that number one center. And then you have either Reinhardt or Gergensen, depending on if they want to keep Reinhardt in the fold or give him a little bit more experience at the AHL with the Rochester Americans. So they're set down the middle. They have a very strong middle. Evander Kane, again, I think he's going to be a 30-goal guy. I don't know him personally. I hear all the rumors of the locker room and people that have played with him, and I see the Instagram posts and all that. But as a player, he's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's tough, and he can score. And I think playing with either Jack Eichel or Ryan O'Reilly is only going to make him a better hockey player, and I think he's going to be very successful here in Buffalo. So I think that's a great trade. Let's not forget, when you go get Evander Kane and you go get Ryan O'Reilly, who did they let go? Well, they let go of a Tyler Myers, who, you know, was much maligned here. He had some great times when he won the Calder Trophy. He's also been very inconsistent. I think he could win the Norris Trophy someday. I think he's that good. 6'7", can skate.
Yeah, me too.
Zadorov is a guy that I wouldn't have got rid of. It's a lot to give up. A top two defenseman probably for the next 15 years. So, yes, they're much better down the middle now. They're much better down the wing. But they still lack some defense. Ristolainen is still young. Mike Weber will be a part of the D. Is Pisick ready to come in? Do they sign an experienced D, which I think we all are anticipating that they get a little bit more experience on the blue line. But, you know, is Lehner the true number one? I don't know. He had concussion issues. There's some GMs that think that they overpaid to get Lehner.
I think that was a misstep, Matt. I really do. When you consider that Martin Jones, who I love, he's going to be on the show today, by the way. Martin Jones goes to San Jose for a first-round pick. The Oilers get Cam Talbot. I don't know what to think of Cam Talbot, but they didn't have to pay a first for him. And there's the Sabres trading 21st overall for Lehner. I didn't understand it.
I wouldn't have done it, Wax. There's no way I would have done it. Now, I guess we have to give Tim Murray maybe the benefit of the doubt. He drafted him. He's seen him more than we have. He knows him personally more. My favorite, and not because he's going to be on the show later, but I said it the other day. To me, Martin Jones is the best out of the class. Out of the four that were available, I would have gone after Martin Jones. I think he feels comfortable with Lehner. I think he likes his size. I think he loves his competitive nature. time will tell. If he comes in and he's a true number one, then they gave up nothing to get him. If he's a true number one, then they gave. If he's just average, they gave up way too much in a draft that's early. But even erase all that, there's question marks. So to say that they're a playoff team, no. If they get
it's a non-starter. They're not. There's no chance.
But people in Buffalo believe they are.
Right.
People in Buffalo believe that they're. I mean, again, maybe they're doing what. Maybe they're on the shrooms that Murray said that people were on when you would have said that if you would have had turned those first picks into the players that they did. Now it's a little different. Because
they finished 33 points back, and there's a lot of teams on the outside looking in that you would think are gonna almost be there. The Phillies, the Blue Jackets of the world, right?
Oh, Blue Jackets! Come on, is there a team that last year competed so hard? I mean, you better have ice bags if you go into Columbus or Columbus comes to visit you this year. They play hard, and the guys that they've added, and you put in Brandon Saad in that mix. This team lost over 400 man games last year. You have to be naive to think that Columbus is not going to make the playoffs this year if they stay even a little bit healthy. That they aren't going to make the playoffs. So Buffalo is not going to make the playoffs. For the Buffalo fans out there, I live here. I would love nothing more to see Buffalo. It helps the economy. I think it's an absolutely horrific place to live here in the winter when your team is not winning. I mean, Buffalo is not the most fun to go out in downtown Buffalo or in the suburbs when Buffalo is not winning. So I would love to see them from my point of view, just for some excitement. The reality is they're still 2 or 3 years away from making the playoffs and 4 years from competing maybe for a Stanley Cup. They don't have any defense. They have question in net, and they have a whole new group. So where is everyone going to fit in? We will see, but I can guarantee that at least they will be more exciting to watch.
You ever been to the Calgary Stampede?
I haven't, and I'm dying to. I'd love to go to the Calgary Stampede. You should get me tickets and maybe fly me out with that big cash that you make with Sportsnet.
Yeah, there's no. You don't really need tickets per se to some of the events. I'm rattled because, my partner over here, Greg Brady's on holidays now, and there wasn't a whole lot I really wanted to do this summer. You know my life. It's not that exciting. But the Calgary Stampede kicked off today with the parade, so that means Cowboys is open in Calgary, and the chuck wagons start today, and the rodeo starts today. And wouldn't you know it, but Greg Brady takes holidays so he can go camping or something. So here I am. Talking hockey with you instead of wearing a cowboy hat and being 12 Budweisers in by noon.
A little Stenson. I've never been to that place called Cowboys. Is that where they serve adult beverages?
That's the place. Yeah, that's the place.
Yeah, I've driven by it a few times when I was playing against Calgary. Never stopped in, but I heard it's a pretty good spot.
That's you're lying, and we all know it. Thanks for this. Let's talk soon.
Sounds good, buddy. Have a great day.
And is Matthew Barnaby, some of his thoughts on the Buffalo Sabres, makes a good point on Columbus. If I was throwing out like the wild prediction that people would probably hold me accountable for or not, if it comes true, the Columbus Blue Jackets in next season's Eastern Conference Final, they lost a ton of man games to injury. Guys like Ryan Johansson and Brandon Saad are only getting better. I'm going to say it. The Columbus Blue Jackets next year in the Eastern Conference Final. Save this clip. Yeah, record that. Worst take ever, I'm being told. Paul Jones is going to join us. The Toronto Raptors, we found out early this morning, late last night, will not be in on the Wesley Matthews sweepstakes. Is it a good thing? He is instead 4 years, $60 million, the same money that Damari Carroll is making in Toronto, signed with the Dallas Mavericks. So a few questions for Paul Jones coming up. What will the Raptors do at power forward? And if the answer is nothing, where does that leave them? We'll talk lots of Blue Jays as well. A rough night down at the Rogers Center, especially for Matt Boyd and the umpire, Jerry Davis. I've gone to a lot of baseball games over the years. It might have been the worst call I've ever seen. Maybe that's stretching it a bit, but it was bad. And what does that say about the Blue Jays offense? In the game they trail 8-0, there was still a play that might have thrown this one off kilter a little bit on a Jays comeback. So we're at the halfway point. They're 42-39. They head into Detroit tonight. We'll take plenty of your phone calls as well on exactly what you thought of the Blue Jays first half. Is this a playoff team? is it not a playoff team? And tell us why. It's coming up. Brady Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Back to Brady and Walker on TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Whatever that song is. It's Brady and Walker. Welcome back. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I've been emasculated before, but never like professionally. We're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, which is great. I love the radio. But the TV show today, Sportsnet 360, has been preempted to go to a Connor McDavid skating around and doing drills. Like, literally. So that's what I've been told today. Hey, you're great. You're great, Walks. But we'd rather see Connor McDavid doing figure eights and pirouettes. We got some tweets in. Oh, man. This one from A. Oh, man. Brady and Walker cutting off and showing the Oilers development camp instead. Am I dreaming? No, you're not dreaming. That's actually what happened. We'll come back on TV. But we are the important thing. We're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Paul Jones joins us, Raptors radio and TV analyst. Let me ask you about the free agency class in the sense of, we all know the money is getting crazy, and everyone, you know, says, well, it doesn't matter because there'll be no such thing as a bad deal 2-3 years from now. Are you a little worried about how this projects for the NBA, Jonesy?
Well, it's something that I guess it was a week ago. No, it was Monday, and gosh, it only feels like a week ago. It was this Monday that I was on with Jeff Blair, and we had Masai on after the D-League team being announced, and it's something I quite candidly asked Masai. I mean, with all the money now, just imagine you've been operating your family and your household on a tight budget, and all of a sudden you win the lottery.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be bankrupt in a few years if you're not careful. And I think that's what NBA GMs have to do right now. They know there's going to be an influx of money. You can spend some of it, but I think the key is to still be, you know, thrifty and frugal and spend it wisely and not be frivolous with it, or else you tie yourself to bad contracts that can't be dealt and can't be moved. I mean, everything's stepped up a notch, and you can step some of the money up a bit, but you don't want to be going crazy because, you know, you get stuck with bad contracts that can't be moved. And, I mean, you look at some of these guys historically. I think, you know, Gravis Vasquez might be turning into one of those guys. Jared Jack. They are good players, and they have movable contracts, and they get traded. They end up on lots of teams over the course of their, the course of their careers.
I wonder about, if you are happy as an organization with your management, there's a system like this that's coming up. Would you say it rewards good management, or is the worry that there's going to be even less accountability? So everyone kind of meets in the middle a little bit.
No, I think if you got, Andrew, I think if you got good management, you're fine. And if you have bad management, it will expose you because you're the one that's going to start handing out the money to the wrong people and giving bad contracts and, I mean, you can see that the market's been set, and I know some of the guys that signed last year or have extensions in the last couple of years recently are looking and their eyebrows are raised, like, what the heck is going on? But, you know, their time will come as this new money starts to get into the market. So, I think, you know, to your point, good management will continue to be rewarded as they make smart decisions, and bad management will be looking for jobs soon.
So are the Raptors in a good position moving forward financially? I know the Damari Carroll raised some eyebrows in terms of the dollars, only a 4-year deal, but where do they stack up in dollars and cents here?
Well, I mean, I think they've got still somewhere, I'm guessing, in the neighborhood of $10 million to spend. I think they're in a good spot. I mean, they have guys that have been locked up. I mean, Lowry's still, he's 1 year into a new deal. I'm sure there are, like, a guy like DeRozan or a guy like Lowry is looking at the money and saying, wow, well, when your time comes up, if you're playing well, you'll get your shot. So I think they're in a good spot. And you know, again, I'll reference the conversation that I had on primetime and that Jeff and I talked to Masai about. For all the people that were advocating tanking, you're not getting a meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge. You're not attracting a Damari Carroll. You're not in the mix before you lost out for a Wesley Matthews if your team is no good. Because veteran players, and I've talked to a lot of them, money aside, they want to go to a place where they think they can win and be part of a winner. Because they've told me to a man, you get somewhere and you know they expect you to come as a quote mentor unquote to a younger player and a younger group, and you keep losing, and then somebody turns around and says, well, wait a minute, he was supposed to help us shake this, and you're gone. So you know, winning is never a bad thing, and I think the fact that Toronto has won and has showed what they can do over the last couple seasons, it makes them more attractive looking to potential free agents. At least they can get a foot in the door.
Paul Jones, our guest, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So they lost out on Wesley Matthews, as you said. He signs a four-year deal in Dallas. Some people really wanted this guy, and others I was reading today kind of said, you know, this might have been a bullet that they dodged. You know, this is a guy coming off of an Achilles injury. Which side do you weigh in on here?
You know what, Andrew, it's interesting because I was squarely on the fence until you consider attitude. I saw a list the other day of the last, I don't know, I think 12 guys it was that have blown an Achilles since 2007 or 2008 or something like that, and only two have really come back and played well. And that scares you.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, you look at their ages and you look at the makeup, the composition of the athlete himself. I'm a Wesley Matthews fan. When we saw them in Portland, the game, and that was one of the best games of the season, Portland and Toronto in Portland, I think it was December 30th or something, just before the turn of the calendar. It was an intense playoff-style game, and a guy like Matthews, he's a Damari Carroll type. He's a Dwayne Casey type player. Can make shots, just a tough defender, just dogged, you know, unrelenting when it comes to defense, really understands that part of the floor. I mean, if you think back to when Dwayne Casey was in Dallas and they won, you know, they beat Miami, and, you know, we laugh about it. Dwayne Casey showed hockey highlights in his film breakdown, you know, the next day, and he had a guy like Deshaun Stevenson, who was one of those guys, and I think Dwayne kind of, you know, winks his eye and calls him a man, and I think that's what they would have had in Wesley Matthews. He's a good player, and I was on the side of too bad they missed out on
yeah.
him, because he and Carroll would have been a nice alternative to defend at the wing and still not lose a lot of offense.
So the glaring hole now is it power forward?
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
There's a couple routes. I mean, you can still look for maybe a lower tier free agent. I'm sure they're combing rosters and looking at guys that are languishing on a bench that can come in and help. It's a matter of prying him away now. And all of a sudden, when you call to inquire about that guy, the other team says, well, wait a minute, this is one of our bench guys. Why are you calling about him? And all of a sudden, you know, that glass of water in the desert becomes more and more expensive. So, that's one of the routes they can go. And you can put together your own package, depending on what somebody wants to have or what you're willing to give up.
Terrence Ross, with Carroll coming in, what do you see as the next step for this guy? Is he more of an afterthought now? Can he flourish in a bench role? How frustrating has this situation gotten?
If he's here, he would be good in a bench role.
Do you think he's going to be here?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the aforementioned package I was talking about, people may see potential in him or see a spot for him on their team, and it's because it's all about the fit, Andrew. And if he's here, I mean, I see a nice bench role for him, coming off the bench, playing against other guys, other teams' second unit. Depending on who he's on the floor with and against. He's got tremendous ability. He really, really does. But it's been a source of frustration, I'm sure, for himself, for fans, for coaches, for management, that he hasn't become more and more consistent. But I think he could be a good bench player. I mean, he could, you know, if Lou Williams isn't back, who knows? Not that he scores the same way, but he comes into that scoring role off the bench.
So it's been a wild week. Have you been able to totally digest it? Like, give me a move that you really liked this week for a team, and one that left you scratching your head a little bit.
Well, I mean, the obvious ones. I mean, you like Draymond Green coming back. I like the Monte Ellis and Indiana. I like Dwayne Wade getting his money. Pat Riley was always big on loyalty. Wade has sacrificed for that team so they could get the big three together four or five years ago. He sacrificed last year so they could get Lou Aldang, and I know it's kind of a lump sum payment, but it was nice for me. It was nice to see that kind of loyalty rewarded. It proves that it can go both ways if both sides are really paying attention to that character trait. Tyson Chandler to Phoenix, that might be very interesting because I think that's one of the things that has LaMarcus Aldridge considering Phoenix now. So. Andrew, there are just so many, and we'll wait till the dust settles because rosters are going to look very, very different next year. They always do, and it's the one thing I love about NBA free agency because the rosters are so limited. 14 guys. When you're talking about seven or eight guys, you're talking about half the roster. And if you get two or three significant moves, it can really upgrade a team, or on the other hand, hurt a team when they lose somebody.
Hey, great talking to you, Paul. Thanks for this.
Okay, Andrew. Have a good weekend, man.
That is Paul Jones, Raptors radio and TV analyst. Yeah, they still have a hole at power forward. And we didn't get too in-depth there, but are you comfortable with Patrick Patterson playing here? What about James Johnson? He doesn't shoot, but at the same time, is this a, to use a baseball term, could this be a platoon at the four for you? I don't know. We got a couple minutes here. Let's do, from last night, best and worst.
Best.
Matt Damon.
And worst.
Matt Boyd.
With Brady and Walker.
Matt Damon, Matt Boyd. Pick on the kid. I said that again. I felt bad for the kid last night. Seven runs without getting an out. No one deserves that. Although, it was neat sitting in the stands and thinking to yourself, I could have done that. Hanley and Ortiz wouldn't have hit it farther off me. Maybe they would have. Best win, worst loss, best player, worst player from last night. All right, best player is from earlier today. Nick Kyrgios beats Milos Raonic in four sets to move on to the fourth round at Wimbledon. So the Canadian is out. Raonic didn't look too good in this one. 34-18 were the service aces in this game. Now, Raonic is never on the losing side of that, or very rarely. And he got pounded today by the Aussie. Worst player. We'll go back to the Jays game last night. Plenty of your Jays calls, by the way, coming up after 2. And we'll give it to Jerry D. No, not that Jerry D. Jerry David was the home plate ump last night. Now, the score is 8-4. And the Blue Jays seemingly make it 8-5 on the Danny Valencia play at the plate. And we're looking at the replay right now. And I still, for the life of me, this is the worst call I've ever seen. So for the ump to punch, at that point, it's 8-5. They save an out. They still have a couple runners on. That could be an 8-8 ball game before you know it. Now, the official rule book on the replay gives this example. All right, a runner attempts to score on a play at the plate. The catcher misses the tag on the runner. And the runner fails to touch home plate. But the ump calls a tag and the runner out. The offensive manager, John Gibbons, challenges the call, and the replay official determines that the catcher missed the tag. This is what happened. The replay official shall disregard the failure of the runner to touch home plate, declare the runner safe, and score the run. I do not know how the Jays ended up on the bad side of that. Best win, Washington Capitals. I love that TJ Oshie trade. They gave up very little to get him. Worst loss, the Washington Nationals. They lose 2-1 to the Atlanta Braves. Speaking of a bad replay, it was a fair ball chopped down the line, or a foul ball that they deemed fair. That was the walk-off winner for the Atlanta Braves. More to come on Brady and Walker. Your Blue Jays calls, they've reached the halfway point. So what is this team? Are you happy with that first half? And will they make the playoffs? Pat Tabler joins us as well. It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.